providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments with Peter Buchvar, where we talked more macro and dove a little bit more into the markets. As promised, we're shifting our focus to the more the resource sector as we are chatting with Joe Mazumdar, editor of Exploration Insights. Now, Joe, a quick recap of a recent trip you were on down in Australia. You went on a few site visits and really were down there just getting a feel for that market. We have heard that Australian markets focused on resources, they were doing a lot better. Their companies were building mines and their markets were taking note. Their markets, I've heard, have turned over a little bit, but look, they're not in the doldrums like kind of what we're seeing in North America here. Joe, what was your takeaway from the Australia trip? Did you learn anything new?
Yes. Well, thank you very much. Yeah. So I went there ostensibly to visit three different projects in southern eastern Australia, and that would be New South Wales, Victoria, and Tasmania. And so with respect to New South Wales, we all know about the Cadia porphyry copper gold project that's being mined by Newcrest, now Newmont, a large block cave operation, low cost, that's in New South Wales near the town of Orange. And as you take what's known as the Macquarie Arc, where that's hosted in this volcanic belt, if you take it up north, it starts going undercover. And that's where this company that I have shares in Inflection Resources is looking. And as we were talking about was, you know, exploration, that type of exploration that they're doing, broad space holes that are multi-kilometers apart, checking out new geophysical techniques and looking for those kind of Cadia-like billion-dollar copper gold deposit, copper gold deposits, multi-billion dollar assets, undercover, that is probably not a program that can be funded by the retail market due to the fickleness of the market. So that is being funded by a major company, AngloGold Ashanti, South African-based. Now they're moving their HQ to Denver because of the Silicon Gold Project that they found. They are funding that, and that's a multi-year program. And so when they drill something and what they're doing it requires multi-year funding and a long-term approach, which is not always the approach that the retail market looks for. And so I feel that there's always been a bit of a, you know, misalignment, let's say, between the people that are funding you in the Canadian market and what some people are trying to do.
Well, Joe, another thing we were talking about before the call with as far as the Australian resource sector is, they have a little bit different mindset when they're looking at a project for exploration or even development, because a lot of times those companies move right into also building the project, keeping the same team in place. It's a different mindset that we see in North America where companies drill things for marketing purposes, even if they know it, the project may not work out, and they usually are hoping that they're going to get bought out. Could you maybe speak to that difference in the way they approach the projects?
Yeah, there's a lot more companies in Australia that filter projects with the idea that they could be built. And so when they filter based on that, they reduce the amount of projects that they would actually put into their company or list on. And then when they list, there's no disinterested shareholders like people that are in flow through or looking for a, you know, a tax loss. All these shareholders are buying into that same idea. And a lot of the projects, like Bellevue Gold, Gold Road with their joint venture that they did with Gold Fields, you know, these projects end up getting built. Gold Road that we held in Exploration Insights, that was the quickest turnaround that I've ever seen from discovery to production, which was under 5 years. Ridiculous. And I'm talking actually the first discovery hole. So that sort of thing seems to happen more often in the Australian market than it happens in the Canadian market. That's definitely the case.
So, Joe, is there anything we can carry over to the North American markets here for investors when they're looking at investing in any of these exploration companies that could help the companies, could actually help the investments move higher?
Well, this is an interesting question because what was weird was when I went down to Victoria, which I'd visited 6 years prior, when I visited Newmarket Gold, when they had the Fosterville mine, when they were just finding what they're calling quote unquote epizonal gold, which is associated with stibnite, antimony mineralization, they were finding this new gold mineralization. And Newmarket was Canadian listed, and they went there and bought that mine when no Australian company would buy it. Before that, it was Crocodile Gold. The merger was about $190 million combined companies. They started finding this deposit, drilling it, and this ended up being a $1 billion takeout by Kirkland. Kirkland ended up going for whatever it was, 9 or 10 billion by Agnico. So definite value accretion. And the question that I got at the Victoria Gold Conference, where are the Australian explorers in this, area? Why are all the Canadians doing this? And that was interesting because I was under the impression it was the opposite in most of these places. Because in Canada, we're seeing a lot of influx by ASX listed companies, especially with lithium in Quebec. So I think it happens on both sides. That Canadian listed companies will go to Australia, Australian listed companies will come here, and it happens, and people dual list. But it's funny that when I went to Australia, I went with the idea that oh, they're doing so much better than we are, and as you point out, that's probably turned a bit because then they're talking about how badly they're doing, which is kind of interesting right now. But I would say, these markets flip, and Australia was doing very well in the last 2 to 3 years. That's probably stabilized to going a bit down. And now the question is, will the TSX and the TSX Venture rebound now?
Boy, I hope so, Joe. A lot of people listening, I'm sure, probably hope so as well. But I think you made an excellent point in the pre-call when we were also talking about how they approach drilling a project. So this does apply to all exploration companies in all countries. The concept of drill it to kill it versus drill it to market it. And I think that they do a better job in Australia of drilling a project out to look for the red flags. And you mentioned that's exactly what we do in Exploration Insight. So maybe speak to that idea.
Well, here's the thing is that these guys try to filter for with the idea that it can get built. Not necessarily taken out, but it can get built, maybe by a smaller producer, an intermediate producer. That's not something that the Canadian market is interested in. They're not interested in a smaller production scenario. They want it to get bought out. They don't want to get into development. And that's why we have this Lassonde curve, where most of retail bails after the resource comes out, or there's no resource because they don't want the de-risking. They don't want to pay for de-risking. Whereas in the Australian market, they don't mind as much because their idea is to bring it into production and generate cash flow. It's a different mindset, which produces different, let's say, products in terms of companies and management teams that are more aligned to getting that project actually built. So you'll see a more potentially diverse suite of people on the board of the management. And so, you're not going to see seven accountants on the board. It doesn't make any sense because they're not all going to add the same value. So you'll see more engineers for an exploration project. You'll see a metallurgist. Those sort of people, which you need early to better help you filter these projects.
So, Joe, how does that carry over to the North American markets? Again, just because the Australian markets are doing something different, they have different type of funders. In the North American markets, it does seem like investors are focused on do something for me now, make the share price go up now rather than having this 5+ year outlook. Can any of this carry over to the North American markets outside of just a broad bounce in the markets to actually help these companies garner more attention?
I'd say fundamentally, near-termism with respect to investing doesn't fit well with the exploration model that requires 3 to 5 years to find or not find something or kill it. Sometimes you can kill something in one season. You have a concept, you drill it, it's gone. The problem is when you really don't prove or don't disprove something and you continue to drill it. That's almost like another part of Dante's Inferno, basically, that you just keep doing it and doing it and come up with a different idea. If you come in with the mindset that you just want to kill it, and if you find it, that's what where you continue, and your investors are investing in you as much as they're investing in the asset. Wrongly, I've sometimes avoided some companies who had a massive premium because of management when I checked out the asset and I found it that it lacked. But eventually that same management team filter the assets at the same high level will find something worth having, you know, and that's really in exploration what you want is that same management team, regardless of the underlying asset, they will eventually get that asset that will be something of quality. They may not have it now, but if you keep, give that team time, they'll eventually get it. Whereas here, there's a tendency to go, oh, here's this high-grade asset. You know, it's been drilled before. We can redrill a few holes and, you know, we could get the share price up and then we could drill some more and then we could put out a, you know, a resource and blah, 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 blah. And that project may not have made it through these other teams' filter because they know that there's a fatal flaw there with respect to development that would not come out in a resource.
Yeah, Joe, I think that's very applicable to the North American markets because there's so many companies that know a project is not going to work ultimately, but they continue to market it and spend money and raise money on that project. And I think there's probably projects that should be killed sooner in North America having that Aussie mindset. But the other issue is capital, having enough capital to actually drill over a couple seasons. And it seems to be a hamster wheel in Canada and the US where companies raise just enough to get through one season, hoping that they get a big drill hit so they can go back to the markets and raise again instead of maybe properly funding a multi-year program. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. These programs need like a more long-term money, like 2 to 3 years. And the problem was a lot of these projects in Canada are remote, helicopter supported, seasonal, and so much more expensive to drill per meter. And so the little money they can raise doesn't go as far unless they get that hit where they can raise more capital and fund a multi-year program. So if you do not hit that hole, you're basically maybe drilling another 1,000 meters a year, which doesn't give you much information and may not get that hole that you want. So you're absolutely right. I mean, I'm seeing the drilling costs in a lot of the states is even without helicopter support, even without, you know, being remote, no camp, still going up to $600 US per meter. So you can imagine how much, you know, some of these other places that are remote, helicopter supported, you know, requiring camps, how much they cost per meter. And then when they go back to the market, how much they need to raise and what might have got them 5,000 meters a couple of years ago gets them 1,500 meters or less.
So, Joe, tying this all together, is it majors that are taking over the exploration game? I ask this because we have seen a couple pretty big resource updates just over the last couple months from major companies that, look, we all know that they're building cash positions. Seems like they're putting a lot more money into their own exploration and having success on the back of that. So are the majors taking over the exploration game?
Yes, in a sense that some of them do have money. And the probably one of the ones that you're talking about that have done really well is AngloGold Ashanti on their Silicon Merlin project. I follow that one quite closely because we own Origin. We've owned that for a while. And they have a 1% NSR royalty on a big area of interest that encompasses the Silicon Merlin, which started off as about 4 million ounces at Silicon, and they've added another 9 at least at Merlin. And so that was a huge discovery. The management backed the geologist, even though this was undercover. and with not much of a geochemical footprint, but they had a geological model that they tested and they hit. So kudos to them. And now the deposit that's really added a significant amount of the resource for them year on year is Merlin, which wasn't the original discovery. So, and this is an area that's been trodden. This is Walker Lane. You have had deposits in this area near the Beatty District. It really makes people rethink when they decide that Nevada or some of these other places are well trodden and there's no point looking. Let's go to someplace else where there's less exploration done. You know, when you could do that in Nevada, that's a big deal. But there are a lot of companies like let's say Newmont that have not been able to replace reserves at any kind of significant level without M&A. So I can see more companies, majors, trying to do more joint ventures, earn-ins, something like that with those kind of companies that they could fund multi-year programs looking for deposits that they want in jurisdictions where they want to work. Without the problem with a major is when they spend money and do it themselves, they're paying about 1.5 times probably in terms of exploration dollars than a junior because of all their safety rules. Oh, we can only use this helicopter company, which is twice as expensive as this one. You know, we have to have this in the camp, whereas the junior wouldn't have that. So they understand their own limitations. And so when they do these joint ventures, they don't want to take over the joint venture and prefer to pay a management fee to the junior, which helps them with their G&A. And they don't want to take it over until there's something to take over. Like there's a big resource and they want to convert it into a reserve, which gets expensive. And at that point, the best thing for the junior to do is leave, take that NSR and walk away and do it all over again.
Well, Joe, just to that point, we are seeing a lot of the majors starting to do more partnerships, that 9.9% stake or 19.9% stake in a lot of the early stage explorers. We've seen Rio, BHP, Newcrest before they were acquired by Newmont was doing a lot of that. We've seen B2 Gold doing it. We've seen Glencore doing it. There's a lot of big companies taking a strategic stake and giving companies the chance to have a couple of seasons. Is this the better route for investors to look at exploration companies that are getting vetted by majors?
Yeah, I mean, I've done that. Going back to Inflection Resources or Headwater Gold, those are two that we have in the portfolio. They've done that with AngloGold Ashanti in Australia, where I was, and they've also done it with Newcrest, now Newmont, looking at low sulfidation epithermal projects in Nevada all the way into Idaho. So for me, that gives me some kind of confidence that if they hit decent alteration and the concept is working, that they'll still get funded by the major. Whereas if they had to do that and come to the retail market, they may not get funded. Or if they do get funded, it would be highly dilutive and they may not get all the money they want.
So, Joe, what are you telling some of your subscribers in terms of this environment where it's not just the exploration companies that are selling down, it's also the majors? The metals prices are broadly moving sideways, but there just isn't that love for, let's call it, 95 to 98% of the stocks out there. A couple stocks continue to do well, but overall, capital is tight. Share prices are down and investors are wondering, what can I do to save my portfolio? Or should I even have a portfolio in this sector?
Yes. And why shouldn't I just invest in NVIDIA or something like that? The amount that trades is almost the same market capitalization of two of the largest diversified miners. The total market cap of that, AI company is, I think, of the top 10 or something like that, diversified miners in the mineral sector. So what we're seeing now is the undercapitalization, low valuation of a lot of these companies that are actually attracting hedge funds to come into the market to look at the mineral sector and start investing in it. But I'm not sure, that'll have to get to a trickle-down effect for the juniors because the junior market is too illiquid for them. But it will happen because these investors are looking at this market thinking there's no way with the potential mineral demand and the supply issues that that we shouldn't be involved in developing more projects. And so maybe what we'll see is more capital coming in to help these development projects get over the hump.
So, Joe, to that point, in the gold sector, do we need more gold mined year after year? Do we need to keep increasing gold production if the funding doesn't seem to be there, if costs keep on rising?
Well, I mean, theoretically, if interest rates go up at a higher pace than the underlying commodity, then, you know, you should keep it in the ground. The thing is, the gold price hasn't done that badly. The problem is the companies have done badly. One of the reasons they've done badly is their costs have risen significantly and their margins have been compressed. And so they have to do a better job of controlling their costs. And that's been problematic. And then so you want to look for quality deposits. You want to look for jurisdictional stability. When you have these multi-year assets, you don't want to get in, build a multi-billion dollar asset that will last for 20 plus years, get into commercial production and have the country take it away from you. And so there's a lot of things to think about nowadays. Market segmentation in the critical mineral space that, you know, in the nickel space, you know, a third of the production or something like that is underwater, you know, but, you know, maybe Indonesia production can't be sold into the U.S. Well, how does that change the market? There's a lot of different things that weave through an investing thesis right now that make it very complicated to know what to invest and what will work and what will not work. Most the retail sector is basically more focused on just that intersection, and that's what drives everybody.
So from that investment angle, even for the retail sector, is cash king right now? Companies that have cash, or even companies, even if they're in small scale production, if they're generating cash, is that making them stand out in your eyes?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that you want to look at somebody's work. If you like the company, you like their plan, then the question is their plan funded? And so you know you've got a 12-month or a 24-month runway. You don't want to come in and say, oh, you know, and you need money? Okay, then you fund them and then, you know, they don't hit. And it's like, ah, that's too bad. And I got to hold the stock for another 4 months. It's probably best to have those ones that are funded. They're already going. They don't need your money. You could buy it in the market. And then you could sell it in the market as well if it doesn't work out. You know, those warrants, when nothing happens, aren't worth anything.
Oh, we've seen that time and time again. Hey, warrants not being worth anything. I guess to that point then, Joe, for companies that you can actually buy in the market, how much are you watching volumes right now? Because there are a number of companies that go no bid or, quite frankly, trade just a couple thousand shares a day.
Well, that is the problem for a lot of people, because in terms of these investors that want to get into the market, when they say, oh, you know, I'm really interested in the juniors, when they say juniors, they mean billion-dollar market cap companies. They're not talking about what we're talking about. So it'll be a while, or if ever, that they'll ever, you know, fund the kind of small companies we're talking about. So I think to get companies that are serious about exploration, that require multi-year programs, the majors have to step up, especially in the gold sector, to fund these programs, because they're not doing a heck of a lot, most of them. And it's the innovative juniors that you want to be associated with that the majors would want to align themselves with. That's really where you want to focus in on.
So what is innovative out there? What are companies doing that are different than what we've seen over the last few decades?
So another thing we've been doing is looking a lot at new innovations, like, you know, the new forms of assaying, like the Chrysos system that they put together in Australia, where they could, you know, they can assay faster and they're better reproducibility. Also, that's on the assay side. On another side is deep geophysics, where these guys are using passive seismic methods to look, you know, multiple kilometers undercover for targets. And I'm talking to these guys about what they're doing. And so for me, that's very interesting to see what these new technologies, because in stable jurisdictions that have been well-trodden, some of the new concepts are undercover, deep cover. I mean, I was doing that in Australia back in the 90s. So the Australians are very well, I don't know, versed in doing that. And now they've had another two decades to study how to do that. And they're really advanced in doing it. And here's another point that I'll bring up with respect to Australia versus other jurisdictions. The Australian government funds a lot of regional geophysical surveys themselves and then gives that information to everybody. So that sort of levels the playing field for a lot of juniors. So these big data sets that sometimes only major companies can fly if they flew them in, let's say, parts of Africa. But here in Australia, the government will fly it for you and give you the data. And you can interpret it you want, and you can go pick your own ground. And so they'll do big regional magnetic surveys. They'll do gravity surveys. They'll do all of this stuff. And also, if you've got a new concept, like I was just in Tasmania, if you're drilling a new hole in a new area, they'll give you $70,000, up to $70,000 for each hole. So compare that to flow through. What would you rather do? I mean, if I was an investor, I'd rather the Canadian government, you know, gave tax breaks for funding or did their own funding for these big geophysical surveys and stuff like that, that they just gave to everybody. And everybody had them and everybody could do something with it, as opposed to, you know, funding these lifestyle companies.
Yeah, us funding those lifestyle companies.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the one thing that really gets everybody. Well, very interesting chat here, Joe. Thanks for, first and foremost, sharing your recent trip to Australia and also doing a little comparison in terms of what companies are doing over there compared to what we're seeing in North America, all tying into the exploration game, which we all know is hard. It costs a lot of money. It takes a lot of time to make discoveries, and then even more money and even more time to build those assets. We'll see if this market turns and helps out a lot of these companies. But right now, cash being king, and also watching trading volume so that you can trade those stocks if needed and if the story changes. Joe, thank you so much for joining us on this weekend show. Everyone, thanks for listening into this weekend show. Please remember to go back and check out our website, kereport.com, and podcast, The KE Report, to listen to all the daily editorials and company updates. I greatly appreciate all the emails that you all send me, so keep those coming as well. Joe, everyone listening, hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.